it on KABC. It's Open Mind. I am delighted you're here, and I'm hoping you're enjoying KABC's new weekend of all kinds of different and wonderful things. Wasn't that an invigorating show where we just got going? Kind of get your teeth into it a little bit. But for the next 3 hours, we're going to get you into something else, which requires you to open it up and certainly to have an open mind. It's a new world. And my guest tonight is an encore presentation for you. And I knew right after we did it the first time, we were going to have to do it the second and the third and the fourth time because we just touched it, Mr. Nick Misserino. Nick, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you very much.
And the crystal skulls, are they still running around?
Oh, yeah. We're running into more and more skulls.
Nick Misserino fascinated us, about 3 months ago, I think.
June.
Like that in June? With the incredible story of the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. Crystals in general. So our subject is that and things metaphysical and holistic in general. So we're not going to really confine our conversation tonight to just the crystal skull or just the crystals. We want to look at a broad area of thought and endeavor on the part of so many of us that is a little bit different. But it's not different. It's very ancient.
They're all tied together.
They're all tied together.
Absolutely.
And we have one of the great masters to talk with you. So you're invited to join us tonight, if you will, to talk to Nick Misserino. Let me give you some numbers so that you can get in here. Because I know that you're better questioners than I am. Much better inquisitors than I am. And we have some unanswered questions about the crystal skull.
Oh, what are they?
One, when can we see it? When can we look at it? When can we experience what it does for people?
Well, one, you can go to Kitchener Canander and see
it. That doesn't answer the question.
See it any time you want. If you want to see it physically. Otherwise, it was last in Colorado a few weeks ago and at one of the conventions there. We've had it in San Francisco. It's in Miami and Dallas. And it will not be on the West Coast again until next year, as far as I know. So I can't give you an exact time. Annie Mitchell Hedges and I haven't talked for about a week and a half. I've been out going from city to city and place to place, so I haven't had much time to do it. But we have word up from Belize that there's a skull on the move there. We have word from Honduras that there's a skull on the move there. And we have word that we finally located our rose quartz crystal. It's moving between Guatemala and Honduras. We have Sam down. Well, we have some people down there looking for him. And we sent out some letters to try and make contact with these people. I hate to say it, but they're in the business of smuggling artifacts and things like that.
On this show, you realize, Nick, you can say anything.
Oh, you can? Oh, yeah. Well, we have a few smugglers who do things oddly enough with crystal skulls, and we're trying to get them. Make contact with them so we can go and see what they've got. We also have a skull in San Jose, which is a large amethyst skull, which is...
In San Jose, California?
Yes, for sale.
Is this one of the skulls that we're... You know, I'm not being fair here to the audience that may have just joined us. We're talking about the crystal skulls. We know what we're talking about. Well, I don't, but you do.
Yes, we're talking about antiquity.
Could you spend a few moments to describe what this crystal skull is, why it's so important, and what it does?
Well, there are several skulls known to man, and basically why they're so important is nobody knows where they came from. No one knows how they were made, and they have a way of, if you will, showing you movies and pictures. If you look at them and you scry, scrying is a method of looking with the eyes and seeing what's inside of a stone or a mirror. You can watch movies move about, and they've shown the way the Earth has changed many times and how people have moved through, if you will, the Earth, and where people have come from, whether they've come from other dimensions, or whether, which means out of space, or whether they come from inside the Earth or within water. And it's just flabbergasting because there are crystal skulls. For instance, 300 came in a week ago from Brazil, that are just were carved, and they're small skulls. And people are confusing them with what we're talking about. We're talking about antiquity. We're talking about something that's thousands upon thousands of years old that cannot be duplicated because of the way the optics run in the skull.
Well, Hewlett Packard had the Mitchell Hedges skull.
Absolutely, yes.
And one of the things they found out that there was not a tool mark one on this cortex.
Absolutely. Not only them, but yes, they did.
And actually, it would be, if you were to give our finest artisans an unlimited budget, they could not duplicate the crystal.
So Hewlett Packard estimated they want $1.5 million, 24 hours a day for a year, and then they would make no guarantee they can come close to duplicating the skull or its optic powers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that several other laboratories have said the same thing. So I think that we're running into a, excuse the expression, a dead end. We've got to find the real skulls and try and bring them in and work with them. And that's what we're trying to do. And so far, something has happened. Since June, everybody involved with skulls has gone silent. We've had no word out of British Honduras, Belize, which is now Belize, not British Honduras. We've had no word out of Honduras. We've had no word out of Guatemala. We've sent two people and a letter into Mexico. We've had no word from them. These are places where the skulls are. The one in Peru that we were looking for last year, I mentioned to you, has virtually disappeared. We don't know what's going on. Where we were able to make contact with a lot of people, even in the boondocks, in the jungles, we have been unable to get any response. Something is happening. We're not sure what's happening yet. And if it means going down, I guess I'll eventually have to go down and find out what's going on.
But they do have skulls, in London?
Yes, you have one skull called the British skull. It's an Aztec skull. It's not Aztec, but that's what they call it. And it comes from the Yucatan Peninsula. And at the British Museum of Man, you have one at the Paris Museum of Man, at the Trocadero Museum, which is called the Aztec skull. It's not an Aztec skull, but they don't know anything about it, so they call them Aztecs. You have a skull on Texicali, which is we refer to as the Mayan skull, which actually came out of Guatemala. And we give all these things names. We don't know, mainly because the tomb they're taking from is that particular tomb. We have no idea how they got into those tombs or how they were used. You have the Mitchell Hedges skull from Lumbatan, British Honduras.
That's the most accessible.
This is not only the most accessible, it's the most beautiful, it's the most perfect, it's the most fantastic energy tool that I've run into, or scrying tool, in my whole life. I've never, and I've seen the Chinese balls and everything else. This is out of the world to me. It's just fabulous. And they're priceless. You know,
there's no way to put a price
on them. You can't put a price on them, and unfortunately, they come in through bandits who have been misusing them for collaterals and stuff, and trying to track them down costs money, like this last skull, they wanted, they started out with 1,000 a week. We got them down to 500 a week to work with it. And then everything knocked off, like I said. When June came, everything just shut down. We couldn't get near any of the skulls.
You know, one of the things, Nick, that is so amazing to me, here is an artifact.
Right.
It's obviously, we don't know how old it is. You know, some of the carbon dating on them says 250 million years old.
Some of the carbon dating on the things found around them.
You can't carbon date the skull.
Right.
It is something that our greatest scientific laboratories say that they cannot reproduce.
Right.
Then the properties of the skull, if a person peers into the skull, looks at it, he starts seeing an unending panorama of visions that happen to him that go back, it seems, to the antiquity of time and comes up to things that were in the viewer's own mind.
Right.
Their childhood, their father, their mother, things that they never even thought about. So here is an incredibly important, fantastic thing. And we have great scientific organizations such as NASA, such as Caltech, such as all of these great citadels of learning, who will not deal with this thing.
Well, most people in the scientific world stare at the metaphysical for some reason.
What's metaphysical about looking at a crystal skull that is now playing history for you and playing your own history? This isn't metaphysical. This is physics.
I agree.
This is now. This is here. This is real.
But that's the answers we get.
You know, I would like, I don't know who's listening to this program, but I would like to hear one of the great scientists from Caltech or from USC or from, you know, from TRW or from North American Rockwell. And we have so many brilliant people that are in these sciences that are in the Southern California area to tell me why you won't deal with this. Because this thing is obviously a collector of information that is unlike anything that we have ever seen
Absolutely.
In our life. And it also plays it back.
Absolutely.
And it gets its information from all kinds of levels, including evidently the, here we go, being a little bit metaphysical with the astral level and some of the other things, which, as a scientist, I would suspect that you want to know as much about it as you can. One of the other interesting attributes of it, I think, is you can take photographs of the pictures that you see in the skull, and the photographs themselves change.
Many scientific people have done that, too, and they still don't understand it.
They put it on the shelf and forget it.
May I make an example, for instance? We were doing a house in not too far from here, Paso Robles. We had three scientists.
When you say doing a house?
A haunting.
A haunted
the guys, yeah.
A haunted house, okay.
And we're working the case, and these scientists are sitting there. And they're very deeply involved in physics and math and, you know, things that I don't understand. I'm not that trained, and I'm not a scientific mind, but the refrigerator rose off the floor slightly and started to move.
It just lifted up off the floor?
Yeah, it just elevated or levitated, and one looked at the other and said, do you see that? And I said, well, what do you think it is? He says, well, we see it, but we know it's not happening. Because it's impossible for a refrigerator to lift off the floor and move. So the refrigerator moved about 8 feet across the floor and laid itself down again on the floor. And he says to me, he says, if you can make it do it again and again, he says, we'll believe it's happening.
Meanwhile, he was looking at his book.
Yeah.
And, of course, it wasn't in the book.
It wasn't there. And
if it's not in the book, it doesn't exist.
And as far as he was concerned, the drawer opened and a bunch of utensils came out of the drawer through the air. And fell on the floor. And his only comment was, how did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
See, and of course they hire people to go around to convince everybody that these things are not really happening. And they would like us to just forget about the skull. But I think the skull's too important to forget. I think it's the type of a computer that's so unknown to us and has gathered so much knowledge and information that if we can get the knowledge and information out, might be very beneficial to us and perhaps to all of mankind. I'm looking forward to doing a lot more work and locating a few more skulls and getting a lot more information.
Well, the skulls all seem to come from Central America.
Yes.
For some reason we don't understand. Some of them are giving us very graphic pictorials of a very violent time.
Yes.
The Mitchell Hedges skull... Not so much. It must have lived in a more loving society, as it
yes.
were. Yeah, I guess they're just going to imprint or collect the information that was around them. You know, I thought about this a lot, Dick. I'm thinking, let's say that this skull was found by some primitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing these marvelous things. And it might be looked upon as some sort of a god.
Absolutely.
And so, therefore... in many primitive cultures, to worship a god, you had animal sacrifices, you had human sacrifices. In fact, we have human sacrifices going on in Los Angeles right now.
Yes.
All of the time. And generally, they are little babies that are being burned by some of our fine citizens. And that's another story. We'll get into that later. Not on this show.
All right.
And those things are collected in those skulls, and we see them. Wild stuff. And I see that I'm getting so involved in what you're saying that I'm back. I've got to take a break here. We're talking to Nick Nicerino. We're talking about the crystal skulls. We're talking about...
Anything metaphysical.
Anything metaphysical. We're talking about some nuts and bolts about what happens in this relationship between physical and spiritual life, because there is A very strong thread. And whether you like it or not.
Absolutely.
It is a part of the world that we live in. Why don't you join us? We'll be here.
4 to 3? 4 to 3. Bottom of the ninth. Bottom of the 10th. 11th.
Gene Autry just may have his day.
I sure hope so.
God bless.
Poor Astros. Bottom of the ninth, right? 2 out. Done in by the Mets. But those Mets have had a good year, haven't they? Let's get back to it with Nick, and let's also talk to Betty, who's right here. Hello, Betty.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, couldn't be better.
That's good.
Angels won, so that's good.
Hey, I was wondering if maybe they had some help from the other side.
Well, I'm hoping so.
Oh, that's nasty.
Being
that
the Dodgers are, you know, gathering their strength for next year.
Yeah.
We got to go Angels, right, Betty?
Absolutely.
All right.
I was wondering if, do you have to be a specially gifted person, in other words, a psychic, and able to be able to see stuff out of this thing, or,
If cameras can see it, honey, anybody can see it.
But, I've always been a believer in this stuff, but I have never had any psychic experiences.
I've never gone out of body, so don't feel bad.
Okay, How long do you have to look at it? I mean, like, do you have to concentrate, or do you just see it, or what? What happens?
Well, I think that you don't have to necessarily look at the skull. You can look at a slide and see the same thing, or a photo. And we take between 1 and 3 minutes on each slide when we're doing a research project with photos, and we have each people write what they see. And most people are capable, after about 5 or 6 slides, of seeing something. As for the crystal skull itself, it's a matter basically of staring into the skull in one particular area. So you may have 10 or 20 people looking in, each one seeing something different. But normally about 10 to 15 minutes is about maximum time before people start to notice something precise or specific in it. Other people notice immediately, and it has nothing to do with being psychic.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with whether you can concentrate, very relaxed. You relax. That's the most important thing, and look into the skull. And where you're looking, you may not see what someone else is seeing, and they may probably not see what you are seeing. But I would say that I know of nobody who does crying that can't do it within a couple of hours at the most.
What particular area is the most prolific, shall we say?
In what regard?
I mean, in seeing... do you stare at the forehead? Do you stare at the teeth? Do you stare at the nose?
You stare at whatever part is left open for you to stare at. Some people are in the back, some people are on top, some people are on the side.
What if you were there by yourself?
You were there by yourself? Well, then you would stare into the temples. That's the smartest way.
Okay. Now, I saw a picture quite a while ago in a National Geographic of a crystal skull. I don't know where it
That's
came
not
from.
It.
That wasn't it?
No.
Okay.
That is one of the skulls in the museums.
Oh, okay. So that has nothing to do with the...
With the Mitchell Hedges or with the Mayan one or the ones we're talking about.
Is that what we would call a real crystal skull?
Yes, we would call a real crystal skull. The only thing is that nobody can get near it or the...
Which one was that, the one in London or Britain?
In both. You cannot get near... I just put over $300 to have slides made of both skulls so that we can see if there are any changes or not. And they send us the same slides they sent us 4 years ago.
Is there any conversation with the authorities at those museums that have the other skulls, Mayan, the Aztec skulls?
Yes, we have now.
As to why they won't let people investigate?
They're too valuable, too fragile, they can't replace it. They don't know what it is, but they can't replace it.
So they just keep it in the vault?
So it's kept protected. No, the Paris skull was taken down about 9 weeks ago and put into the vaults. Otherwise, it was out till then. The British skull is now back on public display in a case, and you can go in and see it. Now, for $21, I believe it's 21 an hour now, 21 pounds an hour or something like that, I forget what it is, whether it's American or English dollars, you can go in and work for 1 hour. You're allowed 1 hour of photography through the case.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot take the case out.
But it's also playing the images, too.
Oh, yes. It was taken down 3 times because it scared the heck out of people.
It's okay if you say hell.
Oh, all right. Well, it scared...
I don't believe in that here anyway.
Frightened some people, and it was therefore removed by public demand, and has been also replaced by public demand, because there's two groups. One group that wants to get it lost, and another group that wants it out in the open where the public can see it.
Well, there are those people that say, if we don't understand it, let's find out about it. And the others that say, if we don't understand it, kill it.
How does it differ from a crystal ball?
Oh, quite a bit of difference. A crystal ball is simply a piece of crystal that's been made into a round shape, you know, a sphere. And
I have one of those at the house that doesn't do anything. It's pretty.
No, it doesn't. You can tap a crystal ball and make it do things, but that's something else.
Gotcha.
The skull is, number one, carved like a human skull. Now, the Mayan skull is just a complete carving, one solid piece, as is the British, the Aztec, the Southern France one, and several of the other skulls. The Mitchell Hedges skull has movable jaw, moves up and down, and can be taken off and put back on. That's the differences. One is carved completely like a natural skull. They're believed to be women's skulls. And each part of them has a different ray of light that is emitted in a different direction or can be directed in a different direction. They estimate, I think, something like 132 ways that optics, light, can pass through and come out through the eye and the front of the face. And that's something you cannot do with a crystal ball. It changes colors. It has color codes that it runs by itself. You can sit there and keep watching it, and, you know, let's say it's a dark room, all of a sudden you see red light, green light, blue light, and then it goes to a high level of yellow, orange, and sometimes violet to indigo, and it just comes out. There's nothing there. It just starts emitting these lights. Other times it virtually disappears and sits there like a series of dots, which we photograph. We have photographs of all of this in slides. Other times it seems to multiply and become two skulls or three skulls, or elongate and become very long. The eyes begin to disappear many times, and caverns appear. And there's one, like a dimension after dimension after dimension. And as you look through the eyes, for instance, the skull gets longer and longer and longer. There are so many differences. We could talk for an hour at what all the differences are. I don't know if that's helping you, Betty.
We've got 3 hours, so it's...
Oh. When will there be another one, or I don't know, when was the last one, or when will there be one in the Los Angeles area?
Whenever somebody in Los Angeles is willing to pay the bills to bring one in and get Annie Mitchell Hedges down here with that one. That's the one that you should see.
It's one of the things I want to do if we can put on a show we have in mind. You know?
Yeah, that's where I think it's at. And she's trying to raise money for a foundation to put the skull on public display in England permanently, in a permanent display place. And we're trying to locate some other skulls so that we can get more information. The skull's available. Anybody wants to go to Canada and make an appointment and go over and see it.
And there's no problem.
And where is it in Canada?
Kitchener, Ontario. It's 60 miles west of Toronto. And it's between Waterloo and, well, it's Kitchener and then Waterloo, which is the next big town up. And you should have no trouble. Just dial it on the telephone. She'll pour you tea and coffee and...
That's just it.
Biscuits and treat you like you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. She's quite a lady.
And her name is again?
Miss Annie Mitchell Hedges. You can find her name in Richard Garvin's book, The Crystal Skull, or in The Skull Speaks, which is a book that recently came out last year that they published from some medium. And if you were in a library, they're in Who's Who.
Okay.
They've been around. So you shouldn't have any problem.
Well, it is the most incredible artifact on the planet that I've ever heard about. And anyone who's heard about it also has to agree. I still would like to talk to some of the great scientists here in Southern California who may be with us as to why they ignore that. Thank you, Betty, for
doing this. Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let me give the numbers. We have some lines open if you want to talk about the crystal skull or you. Nick Nasserino is with me. Nick, you're on tour in Southern California right now. Where are you going? Where can we find you? Where can we see the skulls? Where can we do all this sort of stuff? Bring us up to date.
I think you ought to ask Ho that. He's carrying the schedule.
All right, Ho. You got it?
I got it here. Yeah, we have 2 weeks of tour.
Hit your button over there.
My button?
There you go.
Hello. Hello, hi. L.A. There we go. Okay, we've got Nick on tour for 2 weeks, and it's going to be impossible to go through the whole thing here, or it would be a 3-hour show there. So instead, let
you
me tell them...
You can't do that. So just give,
do
us,
that.
Give us
a... Let me tell them what we're doing next couple of days, and I'll give them a number they can call for the rest of the schedule.
All right.
Tomorrow morning, Nick will be doing a crystal consciousness workshop. This will be Nick talking about crystals and how to use them. It goes from 10 to 6, and it's at the Sportsman's Lodge Hotel. And we will have crystals all out day for sale. That's free to the public. The public can come in for free and look at all those crystals. And Nick will be doing the workshop in the same hotel.
That's the charge.
That's the charge. The workshop is 50, but you folks can come in and look all you want for free. Then on Monday, Nick has Monday off. I'll be doing a free lecture on crystals at 7:30 at the Sportsman's Lodge, if any of your listeners are interested. Tuesday, Wednesday, he's doing psychic influences and astral senses, again at the Sportsman's Lodge. And then Thursday, we go to Orange for UFOs, a crystal skull workshop, and a ghost-busting workshop. We have tried to make sure that...
Are you a ghostbuster?
No. I am a researcher, and I hate the word ghostbuster.
But he let me use it in the publicity, because people have been calling up. Nick has some marvelous slides of spirits and ghosts and poltergeists and energies. To be very honest, Bill, they're things that, with all the years I've looked at them, I'm very surprised at the sculpt, at these pictures that he's got. He's got some pictures in particular of poltergeists that are very startling. And there's the Crystal Skull Workshop. People who are interested will want to know that that workshop, anyone can come in and see these slides. And what happens is that you can see those changes on the slides.
Uh-huh.
Now, again, rather than go through this whole lineup, because he'll be in Orange and L.A. with the Crystal Skull Workshop and everything, much easier to give out a number. And that number is 818-761-0945.
Okay, so you have a chance now to meet Nick, talk to Nick, see the skulls, or see the photographs of the skulls. You don't have a skull down here with you at this time. We do have a scientist on the line.
Oh, good. Maybe I can learn.
And he has, as I'm looking at the computer here, it says, a scientist with an explanation. His name is Boris. Boris, explain all of this to us.
Well, first of all, most of the time we don't have any more explanation than you do, so there's no use looking to us. However, let me just offer the only thing that I've come across that is similar to this.
Are you familiar with the crystal skulls and its properties, Boris?
Well, I've been listening to you all along, and let me just describe to you the only other thing that I've found that is similar to this.
Please do.
This is from a contactee. This is from a spaceman who is walking among us, allegedly, of course, like all these stories. And he, while talking to the Earthman, pulled out of his pocket, I'm reading this from the account, produced a whitish-colored stone about 2.5 inches in length, somewhat oval in shape. It looked like a piece of quartz to me. So I asked, what's that? He said, it's a communication device that I use to keep in contact with my people. I tell you, I was getting paranoid listening to the crazy kind of talk. I asked him how it worked, and he said, it draws power from the life source of your body and directs it in a beam back to my planet. I asked what the hell he meant by a life source, and he said the disc absorbs energy emitted from your body and then transmits this energy in a beam similar to radio waves. Okay, now my suggestion, not a theory, is that this device has been put there by somebody who is very advanced. And as you have suggested on the program, the people in the UFOs have been here maybe 50,000 years, maybe 20,000 years. Who knows how long they've been here. Now, it could be that this device is simply an agency. Now, the most striking thing about it, as you have described it to me, is the enormous amount of intelligence associated with it. In other words, it has so much mental ability that it suggests that it is in contact with or surrounded by entities of some sort or in connection with them. And if each person who looks into it sees a different thing, then it is interacting in some way with the energies of that person. Now, there's just one other story that brings this to... That is brought to mind by this sort of thing. You're saying that they They find the skulls in Central America. There is a story by Dick Sutton, who's a reincarnation specialist, that there
was... He's been on the show many times, yes.
Yes. And he was a member of a sort of group, a soul group, which had agreed every 700 years to meet and write books to convey the information that needs to be kept alive on this planet. And in visiting in places in Central America, he would have members of this group, when incarnate, would have traumatic experiences when they came to these sites in places like Mexico and so forth, where they had been before and where they had been the carriers of this information. Now, the only relevance that has to this is that it suggests the presence of entities who considered it their duty to convey this information periodically back into the planet and could possibly have done something like this to help preserve that information. And Dick Sutton is now engaged in writing all these books, so he's fulfilling that task that they had set every step. The original before the chips, in other words, I was doing work in the chemical laboratories on silicon crystals, which...
Well, crystals ought to be very interesting to you. Okay,
yeah,
I'll accept that. I think it's also very interesting, too, if you notice one other thing, about the location of the finding of the crystal skulls, which is in Central America, and the location of the other major artifacts of our time, which is in the Middle East. That these two points of the globe are the only two points of the globe of which what you could call the crossroads of the two great land masses of Earth. The area east of the Mediterranean is the crossroads of the great landmass of Europe and Asia and Africa. And, of course, Central America is the crossroads of the great landmass of North and South America.
I agree with you. We have a theory about it, not only before we saw the skulls, and we still have a theory about it now. Dr. Brühl, who is the foremost authority and has written the most information on Atlantis, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Everybody's popping Atlantis these days. When I spoke to him and several other people a long time ago, they thought I was crazy because I said, you're looking in the wrong place for a place you're calling Atlantis, if there's even such a place by that name. You should be looking west out in the Pacific. See? And this year, he's starting his investigations in the Pacific because he has located some ancient maps and stuff that indicate that what he's been looking for the last so many years of his life is not in the Mediterranean and out in the Atlantic, but in the Pacific. I believe that the land masses moved from west to east.
Well, that could have been the so-called Lemuria, which was the earlier.
It could be Mu. Lemuria was a later date. Mu would have been before that. Pangaea and a few other places would have been long before that. And I believe that parts of, if you will, Central America or parts of South America were at one time connected with Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that as the land broke and what we saw in the skull, like we were looking down from a plane or something, because all of a sudden the skull, I was with it for 33 hours locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this entire thing go ahead of me. I didn't eat. I didn't drink.
How could you?
And I just sat there and watched this entire show. And I watched the Earth change four times. Now, in each skull, I watched something different. Like one skull only changed twice, another skull only three times. But it all changed the same. Like it all had the same information.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, this young man that was just talking to us, he talks about a stone, which is a communicator, and a transformer or a transmitter. In the skull, we see, particularly it started with the Mayan skull, we see a person putting stones into the eyes of the skulls, and as they do, like moving pictures running very rapidly through the skull. So when you put it in the right eye, it seems to receive it. And when you put the stone in the left eye, it seems to transmit it out. So this is another thing. A lot of this will be in the book when it's finished, but the thing that is intriguing to me, And more so than anything else, is that everybody's trying to convince me that the skulls came from Tibet.
And having been to the Orient, I've been in over 110 countries and spent a little time wandering around, so I know a little of what I speak. I have found no proof of any skulls anywhere, except in Lower Mexico, Central America, and Northern South America. It's the only place I've found any connection with the crystal skulls. Yet I hear all these other... I've seen skulls in other places where they take human skulls and they cover them with brass, or they take the skull plates, or they take and cover them with turquoise or malachite or something like that. I'm talking about a solid, coarse mass that's carved away the way you're not supposed to carve quartz.
We can't carve it.
You know, and it has all these optics in it. Frank Dolan said, and Larry Labar, Hewlett Packard, that when they did the electronic microscope photography work, they swear that there is two batteries in that skull. And they even photographed it, and Frank Dolan supposedly had the photographs. And no one has known what's happened to Frank Dolan's work. He's written a book. Why it's never been published, I have no idea. I wish somebody would publish it so I can read it, because he won't tell anybody what's in the book.
Well, maybe we can get him on the air.
Yeah, well, you might. He's not that far up the line. He's at Santa Barbara, above Santa Barbara there, and so forth and so on. But let me take this a little further.
Well, let me do one thing. Because we're going to get in trouble if I don't.
I'm sorry.
We have to stop for a second, and we'll be back to this fascinating...
Nick, on the Saturday night, we're talking to Nick Messerino, and we are also talking to Mary Grace. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be on the program. It's very interesting.
Well, we're delighted.
Yes. You know, some time ago, a long time ago, I read this paper about the crystal skull, and I think it's this Martin... He spoke about the Mitchell skull.
That's the one we're talking about here.
Yes. And in it, he mentioned, some time ago, but I remember him saying he felt that it was the extra energy that was in it that precipitated the calamity of Atlantis.
Is she asking a question like that? That's hard to say.
Well, I wanted some elaboration on
well,
that.
Well, elaboration is, number one, the skull shows four times that the Earth was changed. And, went into turmoil, whereby people began to flee the earth. It seemed that, and you have to understand, it never in any skull, all eight skulls, when we see people moving, they're moving east and south. They're never moving north, and they're never moving west.
East and south.
That's right. And if you understand the old manuscripts, you understand that energy moves west to east, contrary to what a lot of people teach today.
The way the earth turns.
Then the other thing is that if there is Atlantis or whatever it was, let's just put it this way.
Yes.
The world, civilizations, far exceeded what we have today. If we are to understand the buildings we were looking at, the construction that we looked at that were destroyed, that sunk. And what we saw was mountains become deserts or oceans. We saw deserts rise up and become mountains. We saw castles that were, let's say, in flat land, all of a sudden on top of mountains at very high peaks. We saw where there was a desert that became an ocean. So many things happen. Trying to relate 30 or more hours to you is kind of hard.
Well, there are fossils that are on mountaintops.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not arguing with you. I've been to Central America, and I've been to South America, and I've been to many places where you can find fossils at 10 and 12,000 feet in the air with no trouble. But I can't honestly say to you that the skull precipitated the destruction of Atlantis. I don't believe that that's what happened. I believe Mother Nature got a little angry, and Mother Nature will clean up the earth.
There's something else I wanted to ask about.
Mother Nature has a heck of a job in front of her, right?
Yes, and I think she's going to come about and do it again.
I wanted to ask about that. I go to the Braille Institute now and then, and I heard there was a man from the Satishan Society, and he mentioned the... extreme intelligence in the killer whale.
Mm-hmm.
And he said how they were located, how they found schools down there in the Gulf of Mexico and by the Bahamas.
Well,
and he said that they were so intelligent, their brain capacity was more than that of man, but they didn't have the hands. And he said that if there were anybody from outer space that wanted to contact Earth, why wouldn't they contact them? Or maybe in a binomial language or some other...
Makes more sense than contacting man, it seems to me.
Well, let me make a point here. She doesn't know how good a point she made.
She does. She made a good one.
What
No, I don't know an elaboration on it.
No, I will try and elaborate. The skulls emit sounds. They're clairaudio as well as they're clairsentience, affinity, noise. You get all these things out of the skulls. But clairaudio, we heard these sounds. And we heard them over and over and over. And we spent over 2 years looking for these sounds. And we found these sounds one day by accident listening to a whale tape.
Oh, no.
And a dolphin tape. Now, this was fine, except there was one specific sound that sent chills through our bodies. And I was able to repeat it at one hearing, only once. I was able to pick the sound up and actually, on perfect key, repeat the sound. And I never heard it again until roughly 8 weeks ago. And I was with some friends, and they were with a killer whale, and they were training the killer whale to do their tricks and stuff at Marine World. And the killer whale emitted this sound, and it literally froze me in my track, because it was the identical sound that we heard from the skull. And we're now having it, we're having a tape, and trying to get it on tape, and we have some other people who are doing some work with dolphins to get a certain sound there. Now, the moment we went to the dolphins, and the moment we went to the whale, and this will get you, Bill, is these things are making all kinds of noise. The moment we mentally tried to transmit the skull to the fish, it didn't make another sound for the rest of the day. And everybody, including the researchers, were simply startled. And I just sat there and meditated and tried to transmit the skull to them, and everything went silent. I mean, everything went silent. Where the dolphins went in their direction, they had mics all over the place underwater. We got absolutely nothing. Absolutely, and for days they stayed silent. Hmm. Now, if that doesn't give me the idea that there's some connection.
You know, we'd like to take those sounds and put them on optophonics.
Yes.
And which is the true sound.
Right.
Which you cannot get recording any other way.
Well, they said those killer whales could make the sound in such a high frequency, it could turn man and boats and things to jelly.
Well, it almost turned me to
jelly. And that's how they swallow things. That's how they swallow things, these big things, because their throats are so small.
Well, I won't know how they swallow, but the sound literally stopped me cold. I froze. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. Every muscle in my body stopped.
Now, you got to remember that those whales are capable of communicating 4,000 or 5,000
miles. Absolutely.
Underwater. They have great troubles now because their perception is totally destroyed by the great ships that are running through the water.
Absolutely.
And making all the noise and all the pollution in the oceans.
Absolutely.
And the submarines.
And we also dump some other things in the ocean.
We have been known to put something other than...
Absolutely. We believe, number one, that the whales were in some way used as communicators.
You think they could turn around and destroy the ships?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that whales are big enough to destroy a lot of boats
No, I mean with their high frequency thing.
Oh, that I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Well, their high frequencies are very interesting because they're also accompanied by low frequencies.
Yes, there is a frequency that you don't hear that will affect you.
Okay.
They're very good at emitting ELF. And when you start dealing in the very low Hertzian range, you start dealing with some problems.
Yes.
Okay, Mary Grace.
No,
very
I'm
good.
Freezing.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Nick Nesserino. It's Open Mind. Past the 10 o'clock mark on the Saturday night, it's Open Mind. And with me is Nick Nesserino. We're talking about the crystal skull, crystals, UFOs, and in this case, whales and dolphins, and how a thought projection of the crystal skull toward the whales and the dolphins causes them to cease their activity. Any idea why?
Well, I haven't the slightest idea why, but it disappointed me because I wanted to spend hours recording them, and the recording stopped. As a matter of fact, the dolphins stayed away from us, and for days afterwards, they wouldn't do anything. Now, we have some other people who are trying to make some tapes and see if we can reproduce the sounds they did that day. That sound actually stopped me in my tracks and froze me, and it took me several days to get over the sound. It just vibrated through me that much. And after 20-something years of searching for sound, to find it by accident is the way you find most things, it seems. It was a frightening thing because I wasn't prepared with my tape recorders and with everything else to just catch it, you know. And I'm angry with me for not thinking it could have happened, knowing that it had to do with a whale, but never thinking of a killer whale,
mm-hmm.
particularly one in captivity.
That's a terrible thing to call that wonderful animal.
Well, it is not called a killer whale except by us. By other people, it's called a whale killer because it eats other whales.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and the word got changed around to where it became a killer whale. And that was not its true name. Its true name was Whale Killer. So people confuse a lot of things today that unfortunately don't have to be confused. But I think that there's a lot of connection between the sounds of whales and dolphins and porpoises and skulls. It took me a long time to figure that out. But if I have a skull and I play the porpoises or the dolphin sounds and mix them with the whale sounds, a lot of things happen to people. A lot of things.
I'm quite ready to hear all of those sounds. Next time you got to bring the sounds with you, Nick. However, from the whale killer, let us go to Swift Deer.
Oh, beautiful.
Hello, Swift Deer.
American Indian.
Hello.
How are you?
Very fine, thank you.
Glad to have you aboard.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the program. And I called because one of my medicine apprentices called me and told me what you were discussing on the program. And I'd like to identify myself first. I'm a Cherokee half-breed medicine man. I do quite a bit of traveling and lecturing and teaching. And I've done quite a bit of work with John Lilly and Artie Lane and quite a few other people. And I belong to a group that is called the Twisted Hairs Medicine Society. And it's an intertribal medicine society that goes back about 750,000 years.
Forever, yeah.
And it has a connection to the crystal skulls that I think you might find very significant. I don't quite know where to begin with it, except to say that...
We'll just go with the flow.
Just go.
All right. Well, to begin with, our elders say that there are 12 planets with human life in this particular universe, and we call them the 12 magical worlds. These are in old teachings that are kept down in Kivas, you know, quite a ways underground, about 3.5 miles underground. And there they also have a thing that they call the Ark. And the Ark happens to be a full-size, totally clear, male amethyst crystal skull. Its jaw moves, and it's based on exactly the same thing that you see in the Mitchell Hedges skull. And along with it are 12 other skulls. I should say 11, because the Mitchell Hedges skull is actually one that is missing. And what happened is our elders say that they met on a planet which they call Osiria Kanria in the Cherokee language, which was the fourth planet out from the dog star Sirius in the Canis Major constellation. And that they met there about pretty close to 1 million years ago by our time. And with them, they had taken the total collective unconscious knowledge, in today's modern language, of one planet, each planet, had bought a clear female-sized crystal skull. And that basically, the way they had worked it is that it is a holographic image computer. That if you know how to program into them, you can open the skull, and it's very much like you would do if you had a computer in your home. The large ones, called the singing skulls, or the talking skulls, all have movable jaws. And the people from each planet brought their collective knowledge encoded into these holographic image computers. You could call them the great Novi computers. In other words, they encompassed the total sum knowledge. They met on Osiria Kanria, and they met in council. And the reason they met was because of what was happening here on what we call Ahitama, Grandmother Earth. And what they saw happening was that we were not at the stage of enlightenment, at the stage of movement and progress that the other planets were. They refer to us in our language as the planet of the children, which is what Ahitama means. And they decided to come here. They dreamed themselves here. They did not have to play around with spaceships, et cetera, et cetera. Because you dream yourself here when you pick a human body, according to the old Twisted Hair elders. And so they dreamed themselves here. When they arrived here, they had one alternative, basically. And that was, do we approach the inhabitants or do we not? They realized that they could not yet do that because they couldn't be accepted. When they came, they had no necessity of a human body. They appeared in what our people refer to as the luminous egg or cocoon form. So what they did is they built two huge crystal domes in the ocean. And they built one in what would now be the Pacific Ocean, which they refer to as the Blue Dome, or Sequan. And they built another one in the Pacific Ocean, or the Atlantic Ocean, which they called AUC, A-U-C. And then from these domes, they would periodically come out and visit and work with the different people and the different populations. This was prior to the building of Moon, Lemuria, Atlantis, and an old civilization called Nahilan. And those were the first four great civilizations, according to the elders in these records. By the way, they've said that they will reveal what I'm talking about to you sometime between August the 16th, 1987, and August the 16th, 1990.
Does this have anything to do with the...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Excuse me there, Swiftdeer. I know that there has been a lot of agitation and stirring among the tribes in Arizona about the revelation of new facts and prophecies.
It is indeed.
The old medicine men are coming together from all over the world.
And those are the twisted hairs, sir.
And it doesn't bode well, in fact.
It doesn't because, well, if we take the story forward, you'll find that I can bring you up to date as to why the Mitchell Hedges skull is not with us, because it happens to be the skull that contains this planet's knowledge. And so this planet has not yet come into what we call the gathering together circle. We have not yet gotten over our differences between red, yellow, black, and white, and we haven't discovered that we're really rainbow people, that we're all red, yellow, black, and white inside. That is, we've got yellow in the marrow of our bones, white in our skeleton, black in the pupils of our eyes, and red blood. And when we realize that we've got red, yellow, black, and white inside, maybe we can start communicating regardless of the color outside, and realize that things that are happening to our planet are happening to us, not to them. The Chernobyl disaster happened to us, not to them. And we've got to get those kind of things clear. And the elders know that. And they've got the knowledge that are in these singing skulls, what we call the Ark. And those holographic computers, literally above your head, is what we commonly refer to as the halo, or the tenth chakra would be another word we'd use today. And basically, that's like your contact, your higher self. And what happens when you turn on a skull, when you activate it, is actually the words that we use, a holographic three-dimensional image, quite a bit more advanced than the holograms that you see that we're making and playing with today. Because the holograms we play with today have a very greenish, lime green color. The holograms that are used with the crystal skulls are not only three-dimensional in the sense of depth and width and height and so forth, but they're also very much like looking at a television set, but a television that would be in complete 360-degree spherical dimensionary. If you simply access the computer by turning it on, you will get the things that Nick has been talking about. That is, you'll get playback of different programs, very much like putting in a disc. And so you'll get back what is spent on that disc. Most frequently come back, as I'm sure Nick has experienced in working with the Mitchell Hedges skull, in very two-dimensional and sometimes three-dimensional feedback, both inside your mind and visually inside the cranium of the skull itself.
Swiftdeer?
Yes.
I am delighted that you called. Would you mind hanging on?
I most certainly would, sir.
Because I've got a little piece of business that I want to do here for the radio station and also for Mother Earth. May I?
You bet.
All right. I'll be right back. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind with Swiftdeer and Nick Nazareno. Saturday night, my name is Bill Jenkins. We want to take just a moment from our conversation with Nick Nazareno, and we have Swiftdeer on the line talking about the crystal skulls and talking about the civilization that we are in and how it is not advanced and it's got great problems. It's in serious trouble. But there is an effort underway right now to do something called A Million Minutes for Peace. And I would like to invite each and every one of you to join us all at the Hollywood Bowl next Saturday, the 18th of October, from 2 until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Dennis Weaver and I will be there. There will be a lot of people there. We want the children there. For you to dedicate just a minute of your time in meditation and thought toward world peace. Now, as you heard Dr. Andrea Paharich explain to you and Tom Bearden explain to you, that a thought is something that is in the virtual state. It is energy. It is real. It is alive. It works. Particularly if it's in harmony with the nature, character, and personality of the Creator, of Mother Earth. Don't be so flippant to think that your thinking about world peace doesn't have great value. Particularly whenever you are aligned with millions of people around the globe. And the million minutes for peace is something that is sanctioned by the United Nations, by every government in the free world. Some that are not in the free world, in fact. By people everywhere. It is the Million Minutes for Peace Month in Los Angeles. It's asked for by Mayor Bradley, Governor Hugh Major, President Reagan. And I'm very proud to be, along with Dennis Weaver, on the stage at the Hollywood Bowl this coming Saturday afternoon, the 18th, 2 to 4 o'clock. It's free. Get there. And if you will, join me for a moment as we pledge a moment for world peace. The thoughts are important. Think them very deeply.
Simple as it seems, that's how we got to the moon. And then you keep it in mind all of the time, and miracles really will happen. I know it's true. No matter what the odds are, if you just believe, you'll always find an answer. Just remember, 1 minute becomes an hour, 1 seedling becomes a flower, 1 wish on a shining star can make all the difference. I've seen it happen. It all starts with me and you. Inside of our hearts, we are a part of every being created. And if together we try, it's not to deny, our love will unite every nation. And with this love, we'll build a new foundation so that
your thoughts do count. Don't ever think they don't. And if you really look at Mother Earth right now and you see it torn asunder, I think that we can contribute or attribute the asunder to which we have torn to the thoughts that we are thinking as individuals and certainly as nations. For a nation is nothing more than a macrocosm of each of us. If you can't have peace in your home, if you can't have peace with your spouse, with your children, with your neighbor, with those in your workplace, how as a nation can we have peace? Come join us at the Hollywood Bowl, 2 to 4. Dennis Weaver, myself, many others, and the children. The children are there from the Los Angeles Unified School District. It is free. Be a part of doing something for peace. I implore you to come, and certainly to think, meditate, bring on world peace, which is peace not only for this planet, but for each and every one of us. Swift Deer, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's a great message.
Well, I am so delighted to be a part of it. I want to say one more thing, that the word is out that I was going to be down at, I am going to be down at Leisure World in Orange County Friday night. It isn't open to the public. If you're under 50 years old, you're a suspect. You
right.
know,
that's
after,
true.
After sunset down there. And they did ask me to ask all of you that had found out that it was going to be there. They just can't handle that situation, and they have a full house. Okay, so. But I would never deny myself the opportunity of being with those wonderful people. Nick has some questions for you, Swifter.
All right.
I understand, number one, not only have you taken some of the old skulls out from the word that passed for 300 other skulls, particularly of amethyst origin, are you planning a skull triad symbol, or are you trying to, through the skulls, reactivate those that have departed, or what is the purpose of your bringing in so many skulls?
Well, see, basically, we're bringing in small ones, which are called monitors.
Yes.
But see, each time, there are actually 8 circles of crystal skulls and have been since the elders brought the original singing skulls down from, you know, the Star Nation people. And those singing skulls, you must understand that in 1554, when Cortez came with Father Diaz, two of the skulls were lost, the Mitchell Hedges skull and the skull that contained the knowledge of Pleiades. The planet was called Plahetica in our language.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, two of the skulls were lost and were put back and were supposed to be sent on the ship. A very, very powerful story happened with that, Nick. What they did is that one of the skulls actually got back all the way to Italy. And in World War II, a Navajo sergeant found it in a church that had been taken over as an observatory station, a reconnaissance station, by the Patton's Allied forces. And he recognized it for what it was, saw that it had a moving jaw, knew that it was one of the singing skulls, put it in his duffel bag. He ended up losing an arm and a leg. His grandfather was one of the Twisted Hairs. So it got returned back to the council.
What year was this?
Let's see. That would have been 1944.
Well, 1944, 45. I was with a skull in France that had everything you're describing and belonged to the Knights Templars and to the Society of the Blood of Jesus.
Right. Now, see, that's one of the ones that doesn't have a moving jaw.
And we have not relocated that skull yet again, but...
In fact, that farmhouse disappeared, as I remember.
Yes, the farmhouse disappeared. Quite a few things disappeared. Yeah. The people disappeared. All sorts of things happened. But I was just curious about it. There is also one in... was in Berlin, is now in Italy, with a movable jaw and clear quartz crystal, which was held by one of the Gestapo and
right.
moved from there and is in Italy at this time. We are now looking for it. And so far, all we have are dead ends. We haven't found
it. Well, that's because it's been returned back to the council here in the United States.
Okay, I
and,
see.
That's where it belongs, in a sense, and that is part of the family.
Does the Mitchell Hedges skull belong with the council in your estimation, Swifty?
Yes, sir, it does. I went up and talked to Anna, and I've sat and worked with it, my wife, Diane Mackbird, and I. And it is, you know, once we went up there, by the way, what activates the crystal skulls is what is called the crystal goddess and the jade god. They're two figurines that are passed along to each twisted hair Nagual, or a leader of a wheel, a circle of crystal skulls. And then basically that Nagual has to create their own. They have to get back to the old lineage carvers and create a full-size amethyst and 12 clear ones, and then a small fifth-size monitor for each member of the wheel. And, of course, that's what I'm now in the process of doing. A friend of mine, Damian Quinn, we've been, you know, taking us almost 8 years to get back to a carver in Brazil, whose great-great-grandfather was one of the ones that carved and, you know, is in the lineage of what we call the lineage of carvers.
Well,
I will do is take my set of skulls, I shouldn't say mine, they're not mine, but they'll be our wheels, and they will be linked in, that is computer linked, I use that term because I don't know another
word. It's a good link, yeah.
And we will hook them into the singing skulls.
Well, now, Nick was able to activate it without any of that.
Right, because, see, you can, you know, you activate it, but what you get is the same thing as if I go in here on my Macintosh and, you know, I turn it on and I put in the disk, but I can't access what's in the memory cell of the Novi computer. So all you can do is get into its basic programs.
Well, we got in far more than the basic. We went in at least that we figure if we count the dimensions, one behind the other, there was at least 13, maybe 14 dimensions. Each one holding a picture and each one giving a direct picture. So
right.
This was no simple deal. We've been working with codes for years.
Right.
And we understand sound and we understand color.
Right.
And we understand the rainbow and the rainbow people.
Mm-hmm. And you'll find it's got 144 programs in its basic.
Well, it's more than that, really, depending
right.
how you're looking at it.
I have a basic program I have to get at.
Oh, my God. I wanted to talk to this guy. Oh, well, go ahead.
Can you hang on there, Swift Deer?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. You're with Swift Deer tonight. And Nick Nicerino, I'm Bill Jenner. Still on the line. Nick, you still finish that conversation off there.
Well, there's more than one fabulous crystal skull, as Swift Deer knows, and I'm sure his elders know, too. I was just curious as to his use. You see, I remember talking to a Sioux dog soldier quite some time ago, a very old man who claimed that there were 9 council of skulls, and he claims there are 8. And I'm wondering if each tribe has a different understanding of the skulls, or if they don't. But can you enlighten me on that? Is he still there?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I push the button, he's there.
Did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. There are 9 circles, Nick. That's very accurate. The man that you mentioned is also one of the twisted hairs. And see, the 9th is actually the one that's in the center. And then there are 8 circles outside of that.
Oh, okay.
And the thing of it is that there are literally 5 circles of crystal skull. So there are 13 times 8 plus the 13 that's in the center. So that's how many there are all total. But you've got to understand that for American Indians, we only have 5 circles of 13. And then we hold the singing skulls in, I guess you could say, in abeyance until the time when, you know, we're gathering together in world peace. And the Mitchell Hedges skull is not to be returned, according to our prophecies, and it's about a 200,000-year-old prophecy, until such time as we do set with the children and gather together in world peace. And that was what our elders are saying is now fixing to happen. I'm sure you're probably aware that August the 16th is when the 1987 ends a 1352-year cycle that was called the 13 deaths, or the 13 scourges by the Mayans.
Yes, the scourges.
And we start a 752-year cycle, 7 cycles of 52 years, on August the 17th, 1987. And the elders are meeting because much of the strip mining, much of the stuff going on at Black Mesa, is getting very, very close to one of the main entrances down into the Kivas where the singing skulls are kept. And, of course, if they continue, they could destroy hieroglyphic records that are down in those old Kivas, that showed many of the things and the speculations that we've talked about. For example, the cetacea connection. The elders say that the old twisted hairs that came over from Sirius and Pleiades would not take on a human body because they would lose too much memory. So they would frequently choose that of the great porpoise, the great whale, which you were referring to as the killer whale, which, by the way, is a dolphin. It is not a whale. If you'll check with John Linney, he'll verify that for you. It is actually the largest of the dolphins, the orca, and is not in essence a whale at all, like the sperm whale and the other species in that cetacea group. But they would pick on or use those forms because they could process more stimulus input from the environment and not lose memory, as opposed to taking on a humanoid form, which would require them to slow the vibration down to such an extent that they would lose memory. And so there's very, very much that is there. And as you know, in working with just one singing skull, with Mitch's Hedges skull, there's so much depth to it that it's far beyond anything that we could even begin to imagine. And having seen, you know, the other 11 in the amethyst skull, which is called the Ark, it's awesome to see what the elders do with these. And it is intertribal. It's Lakota, Dakota. It goes all the way down from the tip of South America up above Alaska, that belong to this Twisted Hair Medicine Society. And it's a very closed, very secret society. However, they opened their teachings in 1979. And so there are many of us, a man named Sunbear, High Neil Stone, Leonard Krodog, myself, Twyla Neach. There are many of us, Grandmother Evelyn Eaton, who just passed on, Grandfather Tom Wilson of the Navajo. Many of these old men and women have started opening their teachings and opening the teachings that have been held and kept in the computer imagery of programs of the crystal skull.
Why, Swift Deer, were the crystal skulls always seemingly found in Central America?
Well, they were kept for many years there in Oaxaca, Monte Alban. And, of course, with losing two of the skulls, the Mitchell Hedges skull, which is Grandmother Earth, and the other one, which is Pleiades, and they finally got, like I say, the one back from Italy is now back in the council. In fact, I saw it not even a year ago.
What about the one in England and the one in Paris?
Those belong to the other circles. In other words, the other circles of eight. They're not actually part of the original singing skull group.
Now, I've seen and worked with eight skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Full size, some right. Bigger than the others. I'm talking about full size, not the ones that Dave Quinn is making.
No, full size.
I'm talking about full size
right.
Skulls. And I've worked with...
Guys, we've just gone through a full size hour.
We can't have gone through an hour. We get into those sports.
Hang on, we'll be back in a second.
Oh, my God.
Hey, golfers!
In the midst of a stimulating discussion here this Saturday night on Open Mind, we're going to take a break for network news. We have our guest, Nick Nesserino. Our subject is basically the crystal skull, but we can talk about anything. And, Swift Deer, if you want to hang on for about 8 minutes, we'd like to get back and finish the conversation that you and Nick are into that's so fascinating. Would you?
I'll be happy to.
All right. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bill Jenkins. Jenkins, with me is Nick Nesserino. We're talking about the crystal skull, among other things, but we're certainly able to talk about other things as well, like UFOs. And would you believe mermaids?
Talk about anything you want.
They're there, too. Well, let's finish up our conversation with Swift Deer. Are you there, Swift Deer?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a patient man.
Patient. Very patient, Swift Deer.
That's one of the attributes of our elders.
Yeah, God bless.
Well, I don't want to really hog the program, Bill. I just really wanted to have a chance to talk with Nick. I've followed his work for quite some time, and quite frankly, I've been very impressed with the work that you've done, Nick, with the skull.
Well, thank you.
And I think you've done a great service to try to get people to understand that there's a lot more there that we're not aware of.
Well, as soon as our book gets out, I'll have to make you sure you get a copy of it somewhere.
We would definitely appreciate that. And
I appreciate the information from our Indian brothers concerning the skulls. I think it's marvelous to find out that in the oral history of the Indian nations,
are the stories of the civilizations we've been talking about on this show for the last 9 years, from Pleiades and from Cirrus and the other places.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we could actually, what I'll try to do, Bill, is that I can send on to you a copy of the writings that we translated over into English that I spent about 8 years translating.
I'd love to have
that. And you can maybe relay it on to Nick.
Oh, I'd love to get it. Yes,
I think the main point that I would just simply like to leave to the listening audience and to both Bill and Nick is that, you know, we're all here to try to achieve something of beauty on this planet. And what the crystal skulls really show us is what we're capable of in the way of technology that is in alignment with Grandmother Earth. And it doesn't destroy the mineral, it doesn't destroy the plant, the animal, the human, or the spirit. And we can do that, and we can get it back. There's a lot of help. There's a lot of people that are pulling it together. We did a Rainbow Planetary Festival in Interlaken, Switzerland. The Dalai Lama was present. We had basically scientists, shamanic healers, metaphysicians and psychics, medical doctors, and world religious and spiritual leaders. As well as current scientists, Ralph Abrams, Rupert Sheldrake, I could go on with a long list. And we met with all these people at what was called the Rainbow Planetary Festival and sat down and discussed key issues about world peace from each of those disciplines. And we're planning to hold another one next year in Texas, in Dallas, Texas, another Rainbow Planetary Festival. And, of course, you're talking about the thing you're doing on Saturday.
I hope you join us.
I will be in Dallas, Texas, interestingly enough, doing the teaching to the group down there on the crystal skulls and also on using healing crystals in the American Indian tradition. So I won't be able to join you, but I'll certainly join you
holding
the pipe ceremony in Dallas. So we'll join you with the pipe ceremony there in Dallas and try to link with you that way.
Well, you can, and we hope you do.
And we will look forward to it, and I really appreciate being on your program.
All right, Swift dear, thank you for joining us.
God bless.
It's a pleasure for us all.
You're welcome, and welcome, beauty.
All right.
God bless now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There are always moments that are delightful. And
yes.
It's good to hear the signs and the sounds from our Indian brethren. They are very concerned about what's happening to Grandmother Earth right now. There's a great stirring among the nations and among the shamans. And perhaps we got a little more insight to it. The culture of the American Indians is fascinating. And where they are and what they know are those things that we just touch here and think that we're into the future. Whenever these people have known about it for centuries. Kind of makes us feel way behind the times, doesn't it? Okay, we have Pat on the line. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Nick.
Hi, dear. Thank you for hanging on, Pat.
That was, my ear is totally paralyzed listening, but that was so marvelous about the Indian man.
Yes.
And I'm a quarter Cherokee Indian, so I can really feel.
Okay.
Okay, my question is very, very simple. I know your man is a total authority on crystals. And I just bought a piece of crystal at Alexandria, and also the books and everything, and I've studied metaphysics and truth and for about 40 years, so I'm not totally brand new at this. But I've wondered, I'm wearing the crystal around my neck. I've had it on for a week, and wonderful things have already begun to happen. But what I'm interested in is working primarily healing animals. I've done some healing with animals and some with people. But how can I make this work stronger for animals?
Well, number one, contact Dr. Gloria Dodd.
Mm-hmm.
She has an office in Dublin and one in San Ramon,
okay.
California. I don't have her address on me. She's in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
She's a veterinarian. And I'm sure you can get it from Heidi Ho because they have her address. They did some communicating with her this last year. And she has done marvelous work with crystals and animals. And what we find basically is we have dogs who are just about ready to roll over and not move. And by placing crystals on their collar, on the chest, for instance, we also have harnesses that we put where they have arthritis in the legs and stuff.
that you can put crystals on. We put crystal in the water in their cages, in kennels, as well as, so they drink water crystal. We have a crystal hanging from the top of their doghouse, as well as in their water. And the results we've had, we have one dog that was supposed to have died roughly about 6 months ago. He couldn't even, he couldn't move a half inch. He just defecated all over himself and everything else. Now he's walking all around the place. He's 18 and a half years old. And he's doing a fantastic job. So I would contact Dr. Gloria Dodd and just write her a letter and she'll respond.
And her first name was what?
Gloria, G-L-O-R-I-A.
Gloria, Gloria Dodd. Okay, fine. Now, all right, let me just ask you, if you are working with an animal that seems to have throat or coughing or something, placing the crystal on them at the neck part, and what? How would you? You said you strap that on or put that on the collar or something.
Yes, we just take a little thread or some ribbon or a cord or whatever you want, and just tie it, have it hang down.
Great.
So it hits against the chest or
yes,
the throat.
Yes. And then working with people, if you're doing healing, would you put crystal on them, like for instance around their neck, or let them wear it? With a point down?
Well, I suggest anytime you use a crystal, you use a point down when you're hanging it on the body. I know there's this new school of thought by some people who have all of a sudden come out of nowhere and said that you've got to wear the crystal with the point up.
Uh-huh.
But the point is the energy line. The energy line goes down the chakras.
Right.
And it goes down into the feet, which is the ground. And you have two chakras in the feet, which are very important, the same as the chakras in the hand. And therefore, it's advantageous for you to allow this energy flow to take place, and it comes up through the body again and moves down again. Whereas if you turn it upward, you have the energy go out the head, and it doesn't serve the purposes that it should serve. Have you taken the crystal awareness course?
No, no. I would love to.
I would suggest that you contact either one of the crystal awareness teachers, either Heidi Ho or Peggy or whoever is in the area. And there are at least 400 teachers down here, or graduates or something.
Anyone anywhere near Irvine?
I don't know.
Orange County?
Call Heidi Ho Enterprises, and Master Ho or Susan or one of the people there will be more than glad to...
Frank, why don't you just go over your little tour that you're going through right now, if you will, Nick, and maybe this will be of help to Pat.
Let me do it. Let me let Ho do that, and
right.
He'll give you
all
the number to call.
He lets me do this because I can read my notes.
Okay, wonderful.
First of all, let me give you the number. The number is 818-761.
Okay, that's in the city. Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
0945.
0945.
Okay, and I'll give that number again before I get done. Tomorrow, Nick is doing a crystal workshop from
Yes,
10 to 6.
Yes, I heard you say that. Mm-hmm.
Sportsman's Lodge, and it's $50. Crystal sales all day.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, he's doing psychic influences at the Sportsman's Lodge, 7:30 at night, and that's $20. Wednesday, astral senses, Sportsman's Lodge, $20.
Now, that's in Studio City or Ventura?
In Studio City.
Uh-huh.
Then we move to Orange.
Good.
And what I'm going to suggest again is rather than go through the whole thing, call 818-761-0945. There are people on the phones now. There will be people on the phones all day tomorrow. And they'll give you the full tour because it's a full tour of ghost busting workshops with slides, crystal skulls where you can come in and look at the photographs, see the changes, psychometry workshops, which is Nick's specialty. There are so many different things we've got him doing on this tour because Nick is really one of the most well-rounded people I know in this field.
He looks pretty thin to me.
Bill, let me just tell you something real quick, because I know since I have worn the crystal, and of course sleep in it every night, have another piece by my bed, I just go floating all over everywhere at night.
You're not
and
going I, out of body, are
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, yes. And meeting with people that have been gone for a long, long time, and talking to them just like, you know, yesterday. But I really don't like it. I don't see any need. That's not what I want to do. I don't want to...
Lend me your crystals.
I want to work here. I just don't have any desire to do that. I go and visit with my mother and, other people, and that's lovely and everything, but...
Put a double-terminated crystal on your head.
What?
And take a double-terminated crystal and place it on the center of your head. And just... Tie it down, or tie, you know,
yeah.
or glue it down, or however you do your head these days.
Uh-huh.
Some people have wigs you can take them off. Some
well, don't. I don't.
Okay. And you put the point, so there's one point going toward each ear.
All right.
And then go to sleep, and you'll have better control of the projection state. You also, if you want to control your dream state better, put it from the point of the forehead to the point of the back. So one points to the back and one points to the forehead.
Okay.
But if you're having an uncomfortable situation, put it crosswise from ear to ear along the center plate of your head, right across the where the ear enters on both sides. So each one point is facing each one of them. And I think you'll find it a lot more comfortable, and you'll have better control.
All right. Well, thank you. It's just wonderful to be a part of listening to this. It's just absolutely fascinating.
Well, Pat, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
And,
bye-bye.
Somebody's going out of body just willy-nilly and doesn't want to go.
I love it.
Okay.
I'm going to have a long talk with you, Pat.
Well, I would love to. I saw your picture in Alexandria, and you look exactly like you sound.
Oh. He's handsome.
Indeed.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. It's 19 minutes past the 11 o'clock mark on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Nick Misserino.
We'll be exploring fascinating topics with the real experts. In person is what we're about.
Thank you, Richard. You know, this Tuesday, Open Mind listeners are invited to hear a favorite guest of this program. That's Bill Moore. Now, you've heard Bill talking about his UFO investigations and his book and movie, The Philadelphia Experiment. This Tuesday evening at 7:30, he'll be giving a presentation on UFO secrecy and the national security. So come and talk to Bill. The cost is $15, $10 for the members, at the LAX Holiday Inn. So call right now. The number is 818-501-5559. That's 818-501-5559. Nick, the last time you were here, and we've talked a little bit here on the side as these little commercial messages hit, mermaids. Now, we've heard those. Most people don't believe such things exist, and you're telling me that they do?
Well, I don't know that they exist. All I know is that I've spent a lot of years researching mermaids. I know of only one book on mermaids. It's odd, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when they were one of the hottest religious items for several hundred years. They replaced the angels, who then were replaced by mermaids, who were then replaced by angels. It seems religion has a lot to do with what happened to mermaids and so forth and so on. And mermaids were made the stealer of souls, bodies, and so forth and so on. I think it has something to do with the fact that it's very possible there's a civilization that we're not aware of that exists in our waters. You know, we know more about what's going on outside the planet than we knew what's going on 5 miles down inside the Earth or in the depths of our ocean.
That's right.
It's really quite amazing when you stop to think about how little we know about the Earth, and we spend all this time learning about everything else. Well, I think we better learn about the Earth so we can get Mother Nature straightened out. The mermaid theory has come to me over a period of nearly 45, 46 years that I've been very interested in. It came through people telling me that they saw things, and it was particularly when I was in the service and then I was in the Navy, you know, and things like that, and I traveled around the world. People had these legends of mermaids, and there were actual cases of where someone was attacked or killed or so forth and so on. And I was able to track down three mermaids that supposedly were taken and were taken to laboratories to be researched, and I have yet to been able to get the information on them. I even called the Tatler at that time, which is an old news weekly, which had something on mermaids. I talked to the National Enquirer, some people there, and other places, and they gave me information on two recent mermaid finds within this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they state certain things, which I think are rather interesting. Number one, that the bodies are completely tattooed on back and front, and that means a very highly sophisticated society when you start tattooing bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about someone that is very involved and very intellectual and knows what they're doing. Also, the one mermaid, which was found roughly about 2 months ago in the Amazon region, was supposedly shot by several natives, and then the authorities came and took the body, and from there it went to a college, and from there no one knows where it went. I'm not going to give you any names because I'm still trying to track it down. I don't want other people getting in there. When you do research, you don't want to give names and addresses because there's always somebody listening on the radio who gets involved. You tell about a haunted house, you give the address. The next thing you know, they're at the haunted house.
getting involved.
Messing things up
for you. So you never give addresses if you can or names. You use what we call code names.
Okay.
So we'll say Amazon and that's it.
Right.
We'll go from there. In the skulls, as well as in many of the crystal balls, and in the Chinese ball, which is a 12-inch crystal sphere, and in a great many of the scrying stones. Now, most scrying stones were not balls. They were simply polished stone, or they were pieces of quartz crystal where one end was polished and the rest was left rough. So when you looked into what is called a sunken barrel or a seeing barrel. We constantly see mermaids or mermen, such things as merwogs and different types of things that are in the ocean.
Combination of fish and man.
Fish and man. And there's another thing that we see that's very interesting, that is a combination of bird and man. Now, you see this bird and man in at least five of the crystal skulls, and the mermaid you see in all of them, and the underwater civilization, what seems to be an underwater civilization, seen all of them. Now, it's either on some other planet or it's here. I'm not sure where it is, but I'm writing about it, and I'm looking for specific information right now to put in to finish this writing that I want to do. And I seem to be stopped, would you believe it, not by normal people, but by government people or officials.
Good old friend Uncle Sam.
Well, if it isn't Uncle Sam, it's somebody's government that's stopping me
Uncle Sam
from getting information.
Uncle Sam wants you to keep your head in the sand.
Yeah.
That's true about UFOs. That's true about anything. Get involved with the RTD bus wrecks. You know, keep your mind on the brush fires.
Well, it goes deep in the nut in this regard. I talked to several people in the services, Navy, Coast Guard, other places, and they tell me that there's a tremendous interest in everything that comes out of the water, more than there is things that are flying around in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Those are interesting, but if it's coming from water, it really gets a lot of attention.
Particularly if it's a UFO.
Oh, are there such things? I didn't realize that.
Yes, there is.
There are UFOs? Oh, okay. And we call them UAOs or UOAs. We have other names for them.
Mm-hmm.
We identify things that come from rivers differently than things that come from oceans, differently than things that come from reservoirs and lakes. And we identify things that come from the sky and go in water over things that come from the water go into the sky. We have a specific category for all of these things. But there is a thing called the UFO. I'm glad because I can't get anybody to admit to me at certain levels that they exist.
Do you want to read the Freedom of Information documents from General Twining and from General George Marshall and from Douglas MacArthur and from...
I've read all of them, but I read Project Blue Book and half of it was crossed out.
Well, Project Blue Book, of course, was a joke.
Yeah, so was some
other things.
The
Condon reports were a joke.
Yes, I agree. But I think that there's a great deal of knowledge here, and I think that we are going to find in the Pacific Ocean, particularly somewhere between Chile and Central America, somewhere between 500 to 1,000 or more miles in that area, we're going to find a civilization of light. Now, I put my... coming from this civilization, and I think they're quite concerned about some of the things we're doing. Just like the Indian shaman are quite concerned about what's happening to their holy places and their hidden knowledge places. I would be very concerned, too.
All right. Let us check in on Marilyn and see what she's got on her mind. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's been very fascinating, and I certainly appreciate the show.
Thank you.
I remember the last time that Nick was on, he started to talk about images that literally manifested themselves outside the skull. And, I don't know, we got interrupted with a commercial or I don't know what.
Imagine something like that.
Well,
I'll get a lot of that.
That happens, right?
Yes.
Anyway, I wondered if you might explain a little more about that.
Well, the one image that impresses me the most is an image that stands about 7-8 feet tall and seems to appear every time you work with the skull in depth, and it comes out in a silvery blue like specks. And I'm not the only one that's seen it now. It used to be I was the only one that's seen it, but other people have seen it happen. So I'm definitely not going nuts. And it begins to flow in on the floor, builds itself up, and it looks like an Indian. We're not sure that it's Mayan or Inca or Aztec because it has some of the symbols that are not recognizable to
those cultures as we know them in all the books we've researched, and we've researched several hundred books, and it stands there and looks at you. Now, in its hand is this gigantic club, and it just stares at you, and you wonder what it's standing there for, what it's trying to tell you.
Just keep the club to yourself.
It is a frightening thing until all of a sudden you realize that it is a materialization, you know, it's an apport. And then it asports. Asport means to leave, apport means to enter. And then it slowly asports out, and just as it came in, sprinkles of silver and blue, and leaves. And it has gigantic feathers and has a gigantic costume on. It has the sign of the astrologer. It has the jaguar and eagle sign on it. These are three signs I recognize very well. It has the feathered serpent on its body. And those are the only four signs that I can place. The other symbols I don't recognize. I've drawn some of them, and I've tracked some of them down, and others I have not tracked down. But when we do crystal skulls every now and then, I show the symbols to people and see if they recognize them and can give me a hint as to what they are.
I was thinking about the image in England, right at the tip of England, of the huge man with the... Well, he's carrying a great big... I don't know. Something in his hand. You know what I'm talking about? Like Stonehenge, or that same type of thing. It's a chalk drawing.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if it looked anything like that. It's more of an Indian look.
It's definitely a priest, highly costumed, highly dressed, well-bodied physically. You know, if it was a physical man, I would not want to tackle him. He's a giant of a man, and well-proportioned, muscular, so forth and so on. But it's his eyes that look at you. Now, at one time, we believed that there was another image behind him, which was a female, and it seemed that the female had control over him. That we couldn't prove. But he seemed to do nothing where the female seemed to move a lot without showing her entire self behind him. So it's hard to say... to place it, I don't know, because this has happened several times. Each time, it was different. It was different in a symbol which appeared on the body. In other words, the symbols were not always in the same place. The jaguar, the eagle, the astrologer symbol, so forth and so on. The astronomy, you know, to show that the man worked with the stars. So I can't really honestly give you a definite answer, and I'm not going to lie about it. I don't know.
You didn't. You never saw his image inside the skull then, huh?
Yes. We saw both of them, the woman and the man, in the skull, in all the skulls. That's why I was waiting for Swift Deer to maybe mention that. But we've seen the same man, the same woman in the skull, and it always seems as the woman is the power and the man is the person who... does what has to be done for her. She is a director. Yes, we've seen it in nearly every single skull, not only me, but 30, 40 other groups have who work with me.
That's interesting. That seems to correlate with the etymological study of the Melchizedeks,
mm-hmm.
which were a man and a woman.
Right.
And usually we think of that as just being a godly priest of some kind in the old Jewish religion. But it was a man and a woman.
Absolutely. But no longer today did they keep the woman in that role.
And they still be running around.
They try, right?
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, Marilyn.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I'm anxious to hear you again soon.
All right, we'll have him back.
Okay.
Okay, Marilyn, thank you very much. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. With me is Nick Misserino. We'll be appearing in Los Angeles on Saturday, October 18th, for a special seminar at the Airport Marriott Hotel from 10:30 until 5. This will be Andrea's only appearance in Los Angeles this year. Joining Dr. Buharic for a special appearance and demonstration will be the noted Dutch psychic Peter Hurkos. Some of the topics to be covered in the seminar include Uri Geller's recent activities, Mexican UFO crashes, ELF and behavior modification, psychic healing research, ESP phenomena, star children, earth changes, and the excursion of the spacecraft Spectra over Sinai. In addition to the Saturday seminar, there will be a special intensive seminar in Santa Monica on Sunday the 19th. The intensive will have limited enrollment and reservations are required. And for reservations and information, just $50 to see Dr. Buharic, call 213-393-9405. That number again is 213-393-9405. Margaret. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, Bill.
Got you right there.
Hello.
You're on.
Oh, thank you. Gosh, what a great show it was tonight.
Well, thank you. It's still on.
It certainly is. I had about six questions I wanted to ask of that Swift there. Boy, that was really neat. Number one, I want to ask you something just briefly on how things are going in Brazil on the UFO, the team you sent down.
They had a very good. This is with Paul Shepard and the group that went down there. They had a fascinating time. They got a lot of pictorial evidence. Did not get a pictorial evidence of the UFO itself, but certainly numerous interviews with government officials, the highest officials of government in Brazil. Mm-hmm. They're even making a city south of Brasilia based upon the plans given them by space beings.
Wow.
The government of Brazil is doing that. They're having a problem with them down there. The craft are terrorizing the people. They're abducting the people. They're doing strange things to them and carrying on evidently a lot of bioengineering experiments, crossbreeding, in fact. And a lot of those people don't like that.
I can imagine.
So there is a lot of activity that's going down. They will be going down again later, hopefully to get some more film. You should catch one of Paul's lectures on that.
Oh, that's fascinating. Speaking
of the UFOs, let me just have something else for you here. A friend of mine knows about them. You want to hang on? Only
sure.
Take a couple of seconds.
A UFO over Luxembourg this morning. Police saw it. Air traffic controllers and commuters saw it. Five or six bright green lights traveling at incredible speed at about 600 feet altitude. It did not show up on radar.
That was Paul Harvey, of course.
Yes.
So, we're reporting on UFOs here at ABC.
Oh, that's fantastic. Getting on to the crystal skulls, I wanted to ask Ho whether or not he is going to be releasing any of the videos or pictures that he has taken of the crystal skull, for public consumption, other than just to come and see the pictures.
Well, I'm not the one who took the pictures. We had access to them, and we showed some photographs when we had our gathering in August.
Mm-hmm.
Nick and his group are the ones who took the pictures, and at this workshop they're doing, they're going to be showing not those same pictures. They're going to be showing slides, and these are totally different from the things that we showed.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that we showed, we have access to the photographs, and they are for sale if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
But what Nick is going to be showing are the slides that are quite different.
Well, I had heard on a previous show that there was, about 5,000 feet of videotape that had been taken of the crystal skull, and I was just wondering if any of that was going to be...
Well, Nick is shaking his head over here like he knows something about that.
Oh, my God, yes. We've got thousands of feet of video on the skull. We are using it to compile several books, which we are going to publish on the skull. We have not... We broke a rule of our research. But see, we have a contract. All the research is signed. And one is that we don't distribute... photographs or video or anything like that until we finish the project. The project is the book. And, of course, we're talking about nine skulls when we talk about the book.
Right.
The other thing is we sell photos. We broke down and sold folders because we got so many letters and requests for photographs. And so we made up these two sets of photos, which we gave a short history of, so forth and so on. Now, there is a place called Psychic Connections, which has a very dull medium, as far as I'm concerned, doing the Crystal Skull, and you can buy it. The video is called Crystal Skull. It sells for about $50, and it's a short, brief 20 minutes or something like that. Our videos are 6 to 8 hours long. There are quite a few of them, quite a few. And they involve the actual work as we're working. And as we review these, we make notes, and those are the notes that we are trying to put together to put into the book. The biggest problem we've had is transcribing all this stuff. In the meantime, we've brought in and researched several hundred other books from information we've got from the skull to see if we can verify some of the things, and we have been able to verify a great deal of it that was unknown to us.
But no, the videos will not be on sale until the book comes out. Then we will have videos and slides and everything else.
I'm with you, Margaret. I want one.
Yes. Like I'm drooling. Can I ask the other question real quick, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get a transcript of your program with Tom Bearden.
Oh, beautiful.
Everybody wants that.
And I need to know where to call to write about that.
The show is owned by the American Broadcasting Company. There are some plans that haven't yet totally gelled to make the shows available in audio cassette form. It's totally out of my hands. The station does not make them available.
Okay.
There are pirates out there that have been selling them like hotcakes, we understand. That's a violation of the copyright law. And a lot of people do record the shows. Maybe somebody knows where you can get them.
Okay. Well, what about a transcript?
Oh, no, that's totally... No. Who's going to do it?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was a great show. I hope sometime the Swiss deer can call in again, or you can have him on the show or something.
All right.
If you want to see a video, come to one of the Crystal Skull workshops that we're having in the next week or two.
I shall make a point of doing that.
And if I can just add something, because it was asked this evening, and I've been asked this every day of the week. You do not have to be psychic to see it. So far as I know, everyone has been able to see something, regardless of their psychic ability. So don't feel, I'm not talking to you personally, but if you're out there listening, don't feel that you won't see it because you're not psychic.
Hey, listen, if it's there, it's there. Right?
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, Margaret.
Thank you.
Thank you for your interest. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. With me is Nick Midnight,
Mark.
We're almost done. Nick Nicerino is with me. Again, I want to invite you to join Dennis Weaver and myself at the Hollywood Pole, free, Saturday, the 18th of October, 2 to 4 o'clock, as we share in the International Year of Peace and pledging 1,000,000 minutes of peace. It's quite an appeal. Bring the children. Come, everybody. And we certainly thank the wonderful people at the Hollywood Bowl that have donated that whole marvelous facility. There certainly will be music and there will be entertainment. It will be quite an uplifting afternoon. And we find it will be more uplifting if you were there. Okay, let's see. Fran is on the line. Hello, Fran.
Hi, Bill. I've been fascinated by your show. I've been listening to the show and the show prior regarding the Crystal Skull, and I've been doing some studying on my own. And I was interested if Nick had ever used a chant, a gnom, to unlock any information from the skull.
We've used all types of chants, including the Om. And the Om, by the way, is many chants. And we use all phases of it. And we break it down by its code symbols and sound symbols. And we've used sounds of animals. We've used sounds of Tibetan chants. The best reaction we've gotten is chants from some ancient Peruvian chants done with whistle, water whistle tunes, and where the natives keep up a steady chant behind them.
Huh.
And from this, Dr. Steve Halpin, who you may be familiar with, who is very active with music and stuff, and well-known worldwide, he got his leg completely burned, and one of our ladies burned her arm from the energy coming out of the skull. So they did get crystal burns, and those are the only two times that we've ever had, that was with the Mayan skull, that we've ever had any accidents or where anyone ever got hurt from it. It was from the Peruvian chant with the water whistle for music. And the things that happened at that time was simply fabulous. That's the closest we've come. Ooms have never done much. We've had screeches, we've had dervishes, we've had, you name it, we've had them. And this Peruvian music, this Peruvian chant, these Peruvian instruments did something that nothing else was able to do. The other way we've gotten a reaction from sound is through whales and dolphins and porpoises.
Did you ever use Tibetan bells?
Oh, yeah, you name it, we've used it.
I had read something with regard to... I don't know, the skull and sounds of bells came out of the skull.
All the skulls make bell sounds, but they do not react to bells.
Hmm.
Yes, we've got sounds that go into such, what is the word you use for sounds, you know?
Frequencies.
Frequencies and beyond that, you know, where you can't even hear them. They're so mm-hmm. high or low or whatever they are. Randy Farnes of SRI fame, did communications with a plant, invented that machinery, and invented the laser light where we hit the skull with 2,400 colors a second. And each color has a vibratory sound to it, and we bring it out into hours of doing it. I tried every range that we could possibly think of, and you name it, we've tried it. On the water, above water, locked up in a vacuum, out of a vacuum. Unfortunately, never did anything.
I was interested to know if maybe the skull was tied up with some sort of sophisticated form of genetic engineering, something to do with humanoid crystals. In other words, there's more than just a skull, but there's a whole other form that goes
There's an intelligence with the skull that's very much alive, that is getting more out of us than we're getting out of it. That's for darn sure.
Seems to be accumulating everything as you go along.
Anything that goes in the side of that skull is accumulated by something, and it's highly intelligent. And if the skull desires not to be bothered, it puts you to sleep.
It what?
It will put you to sleep or give you a headache or do something, and you have to get away from the skull, and it just quiets down. And you can tell that it's very well controlled. If you're thinking a thought, or you thought thoughts last night, the skull has a way of playing the thought back to you, let it know that it knows what you were thinking last night.
Was that like picking up the ether? You know, like people that take something and
I have no idea what it is. All I know is that it played back to me my entire life. And I never discussed my life with anybody, including my own family.
Okay, Fran, does that help you?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Your program immensely.
Good to have you with
Thank
us.
You.
Bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on KABC. It's about almost 3 minutes till midnight. Tom Hall will be here with you all night long. My guest is Nick Nicerino. And, Deborah, we wanted to say hello to you because you've been on the line so long, but you got 30 seconds. So make it fast.
Okay. The main reason why I was calling is I'm extremely disappointed recently in what I say was spiritualism versus materialism.
Mm-hmm.
And people using psychic medium or whatever to better their finances.
Well,
I have psychics that are charging outrageous amounts of money. I get all these things in the mail, you know, to like finding yourself through metaphysics, but they're charging a lot of money.
I wish you'd have got to me quicker with that question. It doesn't need to
be addressed. I agree with her, though.
I do agree with her. But a person has to make a living, but a lot of people do take advantage. So
well, maybe
do doctors,
next time, you guys.
So do doctors. So do lawyers. So does everybody take advantage. There are those among us in every field that we get into. Call me next time. Let's talk about that. I'll see you next week. Nick Nicerino, thank you so much for joining us on Open Mind. And, Ho, glad you were along. We'll see you the first week in February. Nick will be back.
Thank you.
K-A-B-C.